Hello and welcome to Books on the Go, a podcast where we talk about our book of the week. I'm Anna Bailey-Karras and I'm here with Annie Waters. Hi, Annie.
Hello.
And our book this week is Ghost Wall by Sarah Moss. But first, some book news. And while we've been very busy at Adelaide Writers Week and Adelaide Festival and the conference that Annie's just been at, the book news has kept rolling in. So we're doing a big update today. Latest news last night or the night before was the Indie Book Prize, Annie.
Yeah, so that got announced on the 18th, I think, of March. And I was lucky enough to be at the dinner, which was really lovely. Mm. So it's an award that's given by all the independent booksellers of Australia. We all kind of vote on the books that we think have been most important by Australian authors in a variety of categories over the year. And then one book is chosen in particular that is the book of the year. And this year that went to Trent Dalton's Boy Swallows Universe,
yay,
which I think we both read and really enjoyed. And
loved it.
Trent gave a very funny and quite long acceptance speech over video connection with his daughter. I don't know how old she was filming, but she was not the most attentive filmer. The camera kept kind of wandering off him. It was very funny. And he also told a very quite sweet but also quite strange story. He had a big jar with something swimming in it sitting behind him. He was clearly sitting in the space where he writes.
Oh, yeah.
And he kind of pulled that off the shelf and said, "This is my dad." And then there was a big pause and everyone in the room was just kind of like, "Oh, okay."
Oh.
And then it was actually a stonefish that his dad had caught in a river somewhere and pickled and preserved. And he'd called him Keef, K-E-E-F.
Brilliant.
And that just summed up his dad, and I think that kind of sums up the book as well. One of those stories you just couldn't make up and have believed.
No.
But it's very, very that family, and so it was gorgeous.
His life has been filled with characters, hasn't it?
Well and truly, yeah. Keef was great. Oh, so that was the Indie Book Award. There's also been the Welcome Book Prize shortlist, which is for a fiction or non-fiction centred around medicine, health or illness. So the shortlist has been announced for that. There's a couple on there that I've read, including Amateur, which is by Thomas Page McBee, which is about he was the first trans man to fight at Madison Square Gardens in an amateur boxing match.
Oh, really?
And so he trained for 6 months to kind of get himself into fitness, but he wanted to do it because he, although he was passing for a man externally, he'd been on hormone replacement therapy and all of these things, he still didn't know how to be around men and to engage in, and he thought violence, weirdly, is one of the most spaces where men are most intimate with each other. And so he started training to box, and it's a really beautifully written book.
Oh.
And the other one that I've read is My Year of Rest and Relaxation by Otessa Moshfegh, which is about a woman who kind of numbs herself pharmaceutically for a year.
A year.
With a variety of consequences. It's quite funny and bleak.
Did you like it?
I still don't know. I wanted to keep reading it. I was entranced by it. I think the writing's really good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know if I liked it. It was very interesting to me and there were lots of ideas in there that I liked, I think. So, yeah, I probably fall on the positive side, but it wasn't – I didn't love it.
No, it intrigues me, but at the same time I haven't really rushed to pick it up. So,
And you've read The Trauma Cleaner, haven't you?
Oh, yes, The Trauma Cleaner by Sarah Krasnostein, which is about Sandra Pankhurst who does trauma cleaning, and she goes into homes that have had – a death or there's a person living there who's a hoarder and the home is beyond normal cleaning requirements. So it's a really tough job and she does it with great compassion and empathy. And it also weaves in her own life story, which is – so you go to different jobs with her. So it's fascinating insight into – all different parts of society and told with great sensitivity. But then you also, each sort of other chapter is a bit about Sandra Pankhurst's life, and she was born as a boy and transitioned to be a woman, but after being married, and all she's had the complete spectrum of sort of life experiences, and is a really interesting, you know, remarkable woman. So, and it's beautifully written. Yeah, I think that's a standout.
Let's hope that that wins the prize.
Yeah.
We've also had the announcement of the Stella shortlist. So they're down to 6 books there. Yes. I think my hot tip for the winner, which I haven't read yet, Axiomatic by Maria Tumarkin, is still on there. So I haven't jinxed her yet.
You're still in with a chance. Mm-hmm. I love how you made that early tip. It's like calling it from the long list, which I love. And I think we will do Axiomatic because we've both been keen to read that. And I'm also keen on that shortlist. I'm also very keen to read The Erratics by Vicky Laveau Harvey.
Mm.
So, and I don't really know much about it, but that's been recommended to me. So
it sounds a bit like an educated story by Tara Westover about a family quite isolated in disarray and a daughter who comes back to kind of try and piece the family back together if she can.
And also, which we won't go through each of these, but the Man Booker International long list has been announced, and I love following this prize. So this is the Man Booker Prize for Books in Translation, and I love it because it always introduces me to, because there are so many authors I've never heard of, because we're so restricted to sort of the English-speaking world a lot of the time. Mm. And I always get some good recommendations from this prize. Although, to be fair, last year's winner, Flights by Olga Tokarczuk, didn't get on with, but her new one is in the long list, which is Drive Your Plough Over the Bones of the Dead. She's a Polish author.
Great title.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
It's a really good cover too.
And then The Shape of the Ruins by Juan Gabriel Vasquez, who I love. I've loved his earlier work. Mm. I love him. He's got a great radio voice. Have you ever heard him?
Oh, I haven't listened to him, no.
Yeah,
I love his sentences. Oh, they just go around and around and you don't know where to start or stop. And
yeah, he's sort of Gabriel Garcia Marquez-esque.
But a bit more dry than that, I think. A bit more of a dry witch. And a bit, I like Gabriel Garcia Marquez meets a kind of noir detective
modern day
type.
Yeah, that's right. But this one I haven't read, so this is The Shape of the Ruins. Oh, Mouthful of Birds by Samantha Schweblin, who... Was she shortlisted previously with Fever Dream?
I think that was it, yeah. Or perhaps that was on the Women's Prize. I can't remember, but she's an Argentinian writer and I loved Fever Dream.
Did you?
Yeah. Really interesting. Oh, it's just like a sucker punch. I read it in an afternoon and it's very strange, and I think this will be equally strange.
Well, this, I have to say, the title gives me the willies.
Mm. Yeah, it's not quite horror, but it's, there's certainly something magical realism about at least Fever Dream. There was some kind of mystical unknown element and quite malicious. Yeah, it was a very unsettling book.
Yes, so there are a couple that I predict will do well on that long list, but so many others that will be new.
Well, Annie Ernaux, I love her. She's a memoir writer from France who's just been writing autofiction. I think she kind of coined that term or was around with the coining of that for years and years. And At Dusk by Hwang Seok-yung. He was here for Writers Week recently.
Him. Mm. Yeah.
So I'd be keen to read those two, and they're both quite short.
Oh, good. Well, lock me in for that then. I'm really into short books at the moment.
Me too.
That's our news this week.
And speaking of short books, we've got a pretty short, meaty book this week called Ghost Wall by Sarah Moss. So Sarah Moss is a novelist, travel writer and academic. She was born in Scotland but then moved down to the north of England when she was a child and has lived and worked in many places around the world. She's written 6 novels now, 3 of which actually got shortlisted for that Welcome Prize that we were talking about previously. And she's written a lot of non-fiction, some travel journalism about her time in Iceland, but also academic books on Romantic era British literature, which is her area of speciality as an academic. And so this book is, it's never stated when it's set, is it? But it feels like it could be set any time from the 80s to today.
I think it's modern day.
Yeah.
And there were 1 or 2 clues.
Okay.
I can't now remember what they were, but there were some 1 or 2 references.
Yeah. But it felt like quite a timeless book because it centres around a family who have gone to work, or not work, to live on an archaeological replication of an Iron Age community over the summer holiday. That's at the behest of the father of the family, Bill, who's quite an authoritarian character and who is an absolute history nut. He is a bus driver by trade, but he loves his history and especially this era of British history. And he takes his daughter, Sylvie, who's probably about 13, 14, and his wife along with him. So they go, they work with the professor, Jim, who is kind of running this reconstruction, and then three university students, Pete, Dan, and Molly. And over the course of about a week, the situation, I guess, devolves as the young people are sent out to forage for food, and it quickly splits along gendered lines where the women are expected to do the cooking and the cleaning and the maintenance of the camp, but also forage a lot, whereas the boys kind of take it as a game and throw themselves into this killing and pillaging lifestyle. What did you think, Anna?
Oh, I loved it. Mm. This for me is an example of the perfect novel.
Mm.
It
just wow.
does, in that it does so much in a small economical book, mm. Executes it perfectly, and it doesn't do any more than that.
Yeah.
It doesn't try to do too much. So perfect can mean lots of different things. You can have a perfect sweeping saga, you can mm. have a, you know, but this is just for what she wanted to do. I thought she nailed it,
mm.
and it just shows her mastery of writing. I hadn't read her before, but it's, you know, her work has been on my radar, so I was really pleased mm. that we did get to it. But so let me just paint the picture though, because when I picked it up, it is literary fiction,
mm.
and even though it's short, I had a feeling that it would be quite serious and I'd have to really concentrate, and I was a bit apprehensive because I've been travelling in the past week, and I picked it up and took it with me on a flight to Melbourne, and I thought, is it really going to be a good flight read? Because even though it's lovely handbag size, you know, for travelling, it was, I thought it's going to be a bit serious, and I wasn't quite in the mood for concentrating. You know, you get distracted when you're at the airport and it's only a 50-minute flight, and it just hooked me in from the first page. I mean, her writing is so lively, so vivid.
It's mesmeric almost, isn't it? It just kind of carries on without interruption, I think, in the way it reminded me a little bit of Milkman, in that way that you just dive right in and there's a yes. real feeling of oppression and you don't quite know what's happening or what's wrong, yes. but you think there's something off here. There's something strange happening.
Sinister.
Yeah.
To me, it was a much more economical, bite-sized prose style than Anna Burns. Yeah.
Not nearly
and
so I did florid, come, but
I did love Milkman in the end, but I think this is an easier style
yes.
to read. But as you say, that's reminded me of the quote by Maggie O'Farrell on the front, which says, "I love this book. Ghost War requires you to put your life on hold while you finish it." So it does have that quality of drawing you in and immediately you're hooked. And just on the first page, there's a scene where, well, it just says they bring her out, not blindfolded, but immediately the sense that a girl or a young woman is being brought out for something, and it says from deep inside her body, from the cord in her spine and the wide bloodways under the ribs, from the emptiness of her womb and the rising of her chest, she shakes, a body in fear. And it's so it's so vivid, isn't it? And that's just on the first page. So immediately I was hooked. What she does so well is she's telling a story with no embellishment.
It's very plain, isn't it?
Very plain. So you can really get through, and every page something happens and something changes. But in that tiny amount of time, you get a rich description of nature. So you can feel the slippery water or the stones under their feet or the herbs that they're pulling out of the earth. You sort of see the smoke of the fire, and you're also getting a history of Britain. So they're looking at the Iron Age and the time that the Romans came to Britain, and her father's basically trying to get back to the roots of being British before the Romans, so not European and not Syrian. And you're getting all of this history just dropped in very tiny little snippets of conversation. You're getting social commentary on, sort of obliquely, on Brexit, because you have her father as a character who clearly wants Britain to be a very, what he thinks of as a very proper
He hates modernity, doesn't he?
And he hates modernity, but he hates anyone that he considers strangers and not British. But his idea, it's almost poking fun at the idea of what does that
what
mean?
Is the because origin? Yeah.
Romans were here 2,000 years ago and they're European. And so what does that, you know, there are Latin words. And so it's commenting on all of that, that sort of idea of white supremacy. And then it also brings up issues of domestic violence and attitudes to women and amazing, really memorable characters. And also she has this sense of humour and just a really light touch. So she has things like Sylvie, who's the protagonist, says, "I had on one of Nan's knitted hats, the sort of thing I wouldn't wear if anyone I knew might see me." You know, it's that, which is
classic teenage awkwardness and
classic teenage thing that you can, it immediately grounds you in the story with her, even though, as you say, it's a bit sinister and you don't quite know where they are and it's almost a mythical setting, you know, or dystopian setting. And then just that commentary, which she does with such a dry wit. And again, just a little, like one sentence here or there, which tells you everything that you need to know. So she's talking about this idea of experiential archaeology, and they have a basket weaver who comes to talk to them. And she now spent her days making things by hand the hard way for the amusement of people bored by safe drinking water, modern medicine, and dry feet. I just love that. That sort of casting a satirical eye on what are they doing, really?
Yeah, and she draws she draws those characters from so little. I think, you know, for a small book, it's got quite a cast of characters actually. You know, there's six or seven people that you get to know quite well.
Yes,
and she does make those portraits with a very light touch. It's very kind of impressionistic splotches on the paint, and it is all told through Sylvie's kind of quite wry, quite distant, but also quite fearful voice, because she knows, having lived with her dad, how mercurial he can be and how authoritarian he is, really. Yeah, when you talk about themes, it's done very lightly, and I don't think it's until you step back from the book that you kind of think about the relationship. Why now has she published this book? You look at people who cling on to that idea of nationalism or a really specific idea of who should live here in this place. Yeah, it kind of almost evolves into this far right rhetoric that it's really hard to unpick, because sure, you can love history and that's a very good thing, but if you want to turn the clock back 1,000 years just so that you and people who look exactly like you can be back in charge, if you perceive that not to be the case, then that gets a bit scary. And I did think that it was really interesting the way that the gender norms in the book, even though it is, you know, set in the 21st century, really just devolve straight away. None of the men want to do any work and they don't, and the women want to eat. And the men want to eat too, and they come back from, you know, a day down at the river splashing about or foraging, looking for archaeological things up on the hill, and say, "Where's dinner?"
I know.
And the women have, I think one part in the beginning, Sylvie's mum has got up an hour and a half before everyone else to put the massive iron cauldron on to boil the water that will make their gluggy porridge, which is basically all they subsist on.
Yeah.
And the dad comes out when he's gotten up several hours later and says, "Oh, well, you just have to get up a bit earlier tomorrow." Yeah. And I just could have punched him. And
he was thoroughly unlikable.
He was,
actually.
Yeah.
There weren't many redeeming features, but Sylvie did have flashbacks to growing up with him. And I thought what was beautiful was that Sylvie brought out the good side of him as well as the dark, because she tells the other kids what he has taught her. He's, you know, he knows a lot about living on the land. He has taken her on excursions and she's had all that time with him. It's a very fraught
relationship. But I saw that more as
mildly,
more as her wanting to be loved and figuring out that was the only way that he would love her, was if she was an attentive pupil and would go on these stupid field trips with him.
Yeah.
But he was a very negligent parent.
Well, worse than negligent. But it was a nuanced portrait, but as a reader you just hate him, really.
I think the scariest bit for me was the way that in this book ritual becomes this really powerful tool. So they're just enacting what people who lived in the Iron Age would have done, and they go through several, you know, different forms of this. But it becomes clear to you, the reader, and maybe not as clear to the people doing it, that what they're doing by reenacting these rituals is reinforcing the ideas that stand behind those rituals.
Yes.
And that even if you think it's just a game, even if you think it's just, we're just having fun stringing up this deer, it changes it you so by the act of doing that. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that Sylvie sees this, all the women actually see this to a certain extent and feel to more or less degrees powerless to stop these men recreating the past in more ways than one.
Yeah, and you can then apply that to different religions and the things that get perpetuated, and it really shows, I think, that attitudes haven't changed. Those rituals keep being perpetuated.
Or perhaps power structures haven't changed so that people who want to do those kinds of things can still do so.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, yeah, I don't want to paint this as a completely bleak book. I think there is a satisfactory ending that does kind of suggest that things are changing, but that it could get that far in this day and age.
That the next generation is a bit stronger perhaps or a bit more forthright or opinionated in a way that can be you know, good.
But I think it emphasises that need to stand up when you see something that's going on that you think is wrong.
Yeah, it's very thought-provoking in that way. And then it has the imagery of the wall, so the ghost wall from the title, which is a reference to something from the Iron Age, so that they're then wanting to recreate. But again, that can lead you down so many paths of trains of thought, can't it?
Yeah.
In current day.
Yes.
It's hard. We don't really want to talk too much in terms of spoiling it because it is such a short book. So without going too much into it, but there's a lot in it. But as I say, I love the humour because I think it made it extremely readable, really relatable. I thought Sylvie was such a great character, and yet at the same time it gives you a lot to think about, so you feel really enriched reading it. So no, it's a wonderful read, Ghost Wall by Sarah Moss. So we recommend that one, and only very short, so you can you can do that in a day. What should we do next week, Annie?
I think we're going to read Axiomatic.
Oh, right. Is that... So next week.
Sorry to throw you a curveball there.
No. We're just talking about what we're going to do next. So next week, Annie and I are going to read Axiomatic by Maria Tumarkin.
Mm-hmm.
And also, and I will be back with Amanda reading How We Disappeared by Jingjing Lee. And she was at Adelaide Writers Week as well. And this one came highly recommended by the Adelaide Writers Week director, Joe Dyer. So stay tuned for that. And in the meantime, you can follow us on Facebook at Books on the Go or email us at booksonthegopodcast@gmail.com. And I'm on Instagram, Litzy, and Twitter at A. Bailey Karras. And Annie?
I'm on Instagram, Litzy, and Twitter at Mr_Annie.
Oh, you've changed your Twitter.
I did, yes. I was like, I'm sick of saying two things.
How funny. Well, there you go. Very easy to find Annie now. So we'll see you next week. Bye for now.
Bye for now.